Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we host thoughtful conversations with people across my personal and professional network who possess deep experience, wisdom, and insight about the issues shaping our communities, our economy, and our future. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and our country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. Today, we're discussing a topic that affects far more people than many realize. Across the country, countless individuals have experienced pain, disappointment, manipulation, or abuse within religious institutions. Some walk away from faith entirely. Others spend years trying to rebuild trust. My guest today is Chantal McKinney, a clergy leader, author, and survivor whose own experience inside the church forced her to confront difficult questions about faith, authority, healing, and spiritual freedom. This conversation isn't about attacking religion. It's about exploring how people can reconnect with God, purpose, and themselves after experiencing profound disappointment from the very institutions they've trusted most. Chantal, how are you? Thank you for locking back in again.
Yes, I'm doing great. I'm honored to be here with you. Looking forward to the conversation at hand. That was a great intro. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been known to practice every now and then and make sure that I'm ready to go and prepared. But for my audience, you may recognize Chantal. We had her on the show just over a year ago. We had a really great conversation called Beyond the Pulpit. And that was actually with Pastor John Balls, who's a good friend of mine, as well as Barbara. And we just had a great conversation. I would encourage my audience. I've been meaning, Chantal, to do that kind of a conversation again. But obviously, the news cycle has been busy. Politics has been busy. Our economy has been messy. It's been so many other things that I've been wanting to talk about with my audience. But here we are. We're back, and we're back on the conversation about spirituality. But I do want to encourage my audience, if you missed the conversation last year, you can go to lockedin.cash. You can find it there. You can, hopefully you're subscribed to my YouTube channel. You can also see the video there as well. But Chantal, I'm excited to have you back. You've released a book since the last time we had you on the show. And, you know, I know quite a bit about your personal story. You and I've had a lot of conversations offline. My audience doesn't know as much about it. So I just want to talk about a little bit about the theme around the institution that sort of broke your heart and the breakup that you had with church and organized religion. But just talk a little bit about that experience and the relationship and how it's shaped who you are today.
Sure. So I should start by saying I am an Episcopal priest. I'm still an Episcopal priest, but I no longer serve in churches that's my own desire. I was severely sexually harassed, some would say sexual assault, 13 years ago here in Winston-Salem when I was an associate rector at an Episcopal church. The senior priest, who we call a rector, harmed me, threatened my job if I went forward. And it shattered me, not only because of what happened to me, but the way that I was treated when I went forward, the occurrences that took place upon going forward broke my heart, shattered my concept of church equals God. So I'm now, I would say, I am an expansive Christian. I've written a book, Following Jesus Beyond Church Walls, and it does detail my story, but it also wrestles with and confronts some of the shadow side of the church, where we still harm people behind closed doors, and reimagines what faith and religion should and could be as we prepare for the future, imagining what faith might look like a generation from now once we confront the fact that harm is still happening in the church.
You know, and we're going to get deeper into your story and your experience. And I certainly want to talk a lot about the book and encourage not just those members of my audience that might be women, but I think as you listen and hear Chantal's experience, you're going to quickly learn that it speaks to a lot of us. And maybe your experience isn't necessarily sexual in nature. Maybe your experience is something different. But I think Chantal's testimony can speak to a variety of experiences that we're all having or have had within the institution that we call church. You know, one question I have for you, Chantal. I think one thing that makes it hard for people to speak out about the church is that oftentimes we conflate the institution of church also with God.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about how do we distinguish from God, the sovereign, the creator, the source, and then the institutions that we actually just seem to identify with.
There is and should be a difference. Humans are fallible, humans are imperfect, and humans are running the church and running religion. And it is the human element that there would be people that abuse their power and misuse their power. Not every person can be in alignment with our Creator 100% of the time. So I think it's really wise for individuals to understand that while a lot of good can happen from religion, that the religion does not equal God and the church does not equal God. I understand, you know, we all have different understandings of our Creator, but for me, what every religion comes back to is that God is love. And when I think about love, the energy of love, I imagine that source of divine love is in you, and it's in me, and it's in every human being. It's in Mother Nature. It's in creation. And what is it like to have more direct contact with that element that is divine love without needing the layers that come with religion? I think that's what's so important for we who have experienced that shattering, we who have experienced being harmed by the church that says they represent God. It's an invitation to reclaim our autonomy. That what does it look like to like begin a spiritual journey where I can be in direct contact with my Creator again without layers of people in between?
Why do you think institutions such as church, why do they create these layers? I don't think it's any one particular denomination. It seems like around any denomination, this seems to be true. And I don't think this is particularly true just to Christianity. I mean, I think if you look at Islam, you see the same layering. Why do you think that layering is there?
I don't have the answer to that. I can tell you that it goes back centuries. And I would also even add, it's not just other religions. There are cultures that have layers of hierarchy. There, even in the animal kingdom, we have layers of hierarchy. So there's a part of me, Algernon, and I will fully admit, it may be that my opinion on this is not always going to be the same. But at the moment, where my opinion is that I'm not sure that hierarchy in and of itself is the problem. It's how hierarchy misuses their power. I believe that the original intention of leadership above others is probably to guard and protect at its most ideal. I love to imagine that at its best, church might be guardians of the faith, and that if there are churches with hierarchies, that those people in hierarchical positions are there to guard the faith, that guarding the faith should never be done in such a way so that when people come forward to report harm, we're the ones that are causing problems because we make the faith look bad, right? Like it's kind of gotten turned around where church's business is operating instead of that pure-hearted guardians of the faith. So that might not be an answer to your question, but it's the one that came out.
No, and you know, sometimes it's not about answering the question. I think the question oftentimes might just reveal what your response is to it. It may not necessarily answer the question, but certainly helps us to see, you know, inside your mind and share your experience. At the outset of our conversation, Chantal, I want to go back to something you talked a little bit about the leader that obviously you had the conflict with in your own church. Certainly, now that I just heard what you said, maybe somebody that you saw as a guardian of faith, and so even the experience that you went through might have been received as somewhat of a betrayal. For someone who, because what I've found when I talk, especially to women, oftentimes women may not even be fully aware that they've went through a sexual abuse or some type of a sexual assault. Are you able to talk a little bit more about your experience just for that person that might be listening, that could be sort of going through the same thing, but be totally unaware that they are a victim?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of language around gaslighting in the news and narcissistic personalities. And I think it reminds me also of the metaphor where I might get the story wrong, but something like a frog is in warm water and the water keeps getting cut up and up. And it's like, it's fine because there's like a slow adjustment and a slow adjustment. And then the next thing you know, the water is boiling. And my understanding is that people that abuse their power through sexual harassment, that there is some, there is like the slow dialing up of it where it doesn't feel black and white, but all of a sudden you're in a situation where you're feeling stuck, or like for me, my job was threatened if I were to go forward. And that was when it was like, oh my God, what is happening? Like, it's just, and here's the other thing, Algernon, I'm not a psychologist, so I can't psychologize why this is, but harassment often happens to women that have been harmed before. And so I had been harassed before, and it's like you can get triggered where you're in a state of active trauma. So you're not you are not rationally thinking, oh, I believe that the person that's supervising me is doing X, Y, and Z, and this is inappropriate, so let me make these decisions. Like, it's like deer in the headlights where you're freaking out and you don't know what to do. Unfortunately, this is not an uncommon problem for women. Workplace harassment or harm in the workplace, it tends to be higher in churches. So I suspect that most women that are listening will have either experienced something similar or will have known someone that has. And that's an unfortunate situation that needs to be named out loud more often.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the whole grooming aspect of it. Absolutely. That oftentimes women go through and may not even be fully aware and cognizant that they are being groomed. And by the time that process has been completed, you're not even aware that you are in a harassment situation. In fact, you know, I've even read many stories where women start to believe they invited the harassment. I think a lot of times in church that happens because you have so much trust in these guardians of the faith that are within church, and you look up to these oftentimes men. It's sort of patriarchal. And I think some women go through these experiences almost similar to how children go through these experiences within church, and they're being groomed, and they oftentimes they're just not even aware they're being groomed, and they oftentimes think it's their own fault. How did you distinguish between the two of saying, okay, hey, no, this isn't something I invited, but my actual trust is being betrayed here?
It suddenly became black and white clear when my job was threatened. That was the undeniable, like, the water's boiling now. Like, this is like totally, I got to get out. Like, this is terrible what's happening right now. Right. So there, for me, I had that moment, and I literally was praying to God, like, I need help. I can't get out. Cause he threatened my job. And then when he put it in writing, I printed out the email and went forward. But you're right, there is grooming. And the other thing is the shame put upon women for going forward. It's not even that we think it's our fault. I never did think it was my fault, but the church will shame the woman over the man. And society will often shame the woman over the man. And so there are unfair expectations in situations like this. Even in an abuse of power, even when there's a clear job threat made in writing, the way that the woman is shamed is unbelievably toxic and harmful. And that's the type of thing we need to shine a light on. And in my book, for example, I intentionally don't name names. And I do that not only because I do that and I say that because I don't want it to be about my story, because it's not about that man. It's not about that bishop. It's about the fact that this is happening systematically in the Episcopal Church and in other denominations to even a higher degree than in the workplace. So this is an ongoing problem. I mean, we see the news with the Southern Baptist Church, but the reality is harm is happening against women in patriarchal Christianity today. As we know it, we are being treated as second-class citizens. And that's a story that needs to come out.
Yeah. And no amount of love can overcome harm when you're just in a dangerous situation and dangerous environment. And I think that's worth being said. You know, one of our first encounters, Chantel, you reached out to me, I don't know, maybe a few years ago. You just felt led to put together some small groups to where we could start speaking to people about spirituality and their faith, and people that maybe no longer find a home directly within the church, but still want to grow and expand their faith. And, you know, after learning about your experience within the church, you know, reflecting back on when you reached out to me, that carries even more weight now. It means even more, because when I think back on it now, you know, despite the experience that you had within church, you didn't use that as some of an excuse or a reason to completely disengage from faith. You didn't allow the betrayal to just totally disrupt your relationship with God. And it almost sounds like it was a little bit of a spiritual awakening for you. Maybe highlight that a little bit, and how the experience and what could have been a really, really deep wound actually became a moment of awakening in your life.
Yeah. In my book, I describe it as a portal to a new, like the wound in me, the scar that came about from the trauma. And it was a trauma. I ended up on short-term disability, just to let the audience know how bad it was. It was very bad. But what in my book, I described that was a portal to a spiritual awakening, because it allowed me, it forced me to seek to encounter the divine outside of the confines of religion. And that ultimately is very liberating, right? So it took me on a beautiful journey to say, what does it look like to be a Christian, to be a follower of Jesus, and to still love God, still follow Jesus, but to have the sight and understanding of how to do that beyond church walls, hence my book, Following Jesus Beyond Church Walls. So part of the, a big part of the book is accompanying the reader toward a paradigm shift to say, you can actually follow Jesus beyond church walls without being the member of a church, without showing up on church in a building on Sunday morning. I do have a soft heart for church leaders. I coach and consult with churches around the country. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There are lots of good churches and good church leaders. And there are millions of people, 40 million people in the last 25 years have pulled away from their church. Over 62% still say they love Jesus and God. And these millions of people need an alternative paradigm, because right now there is nothing there. So that's kind of like where my heart is now. It's like, what does it look like to be the pastor for all of these people that still do have faith and yet don't feel like they can go back to the church that they were raised in or were once a part of?
You know, and every time you mention the book, or if you say anything about the book, Chantel, I want you to say the name, and I want you to remind my audience where they can purchase the book, because this is a long form conversation and people might be joining us at any point within the conversation. So we want to make sure that as they get inspired and moved to purchase the book and learn more from the book, then they have a way to do it. But I'm also going to take this moment to say that I do not have my autographed copy of the book. I want Chantel to know that. The audience needs to know that. I have not read the book. So I want to say that, just full disclosure, I would like to read the book. And perhaps, Chantel, what we could do is this summer, that could be one of the books that I read this summer. And we could even have you back on later in the year again, have an even deeper conversation about the book as well. But yeah, definitely encourage people by informing them of where they can find the book as well. You mentioned Jesus, and you know, as I've studied the Bible more closely, but also integrated that with more philosophical study and more spiritual expansion in terms of my own life, you know, when you read the Bible, There's just, and I've challenged Christians, because maybe I'm not reading it close enough, but I challenge Christians to help me find this. But this doesn't appear to be anything within the Bible where Jesus is actually encouraging you to go to church. And it doesn't appear to be anything in the Bible where Jesus is telling you to worship him either. It appears to me, if I read all the text that's in red, that's in the New Testament, it appears that everything that Jesus talks about is about inner transformation and about just coming to know the power and the knowledge and the energy and the love that you have from within. I think your book is also encouraging people to trust that inner wisdom. So what does that look like in practical nature, Chantal? What does that look like in someone's own life when they start to trust that inner wisdom above the institutions with the four walls and so forth?
What does it look like when that happens? So yes, you've said so much that I want to reply to. First, I'm going to say, first, you can get your autographed copy at Bookmarks. If you live here in Winston-Salem or in Forsyth County, I hope you will support our local independent bookstore where they have autographed copies on hand. You can also get it online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but I'm a big believer in supporting our independent bookstore, so I encourage you to go there. Second, you are right. What Jesus said, in my opinion, that most closely aligns with church, the word church is not in the Bible, but what is most closely aligned, in my opinion, is where Jesus says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, I will be in the midst of them. But Jesus did talk and embody the understanding of inner transformation and inner transformation that leads to service of others. So one of the things in the book that I talk about is, like, if you look at a lot of his bigger miracles, the feeding of the 5,000, there's a number of miracles where what precedes that is him going away to pray. Like, he pulls away from the crowds. He pulls away from the day-to-day activities of his life and draws away, goes into God in prayer. And then after that quiet time of reconnecting to God in his heart, then he is able to co-create the kingdom of God on this earth by his miracles. So you are right. And I do talk about kind of a foundational shift is the notion, and Jesus teaches this, Christ abides in you, right? As the Father abides in me, so I abide in you, abide in my love. That's in the Bible. But patriarchal Christianity sets it up that God is outside of you and authority is outside of you and you seek God outside of you. So you drive to church on a Sunday and go into a building and sit in a pew and listen to someone else. And then you've checked it off and then you go about your week. But Jesus didn't do that. Like, Jesus went inward to connect with God the Father. And so part of what I'm saying is to integrate the divine masculine and the divine feminine is to understand that the divine source of love can be outside of ourselves, yes, and also inside of ourselves. And we have oppressed that knowledge. So how you rekindle that understanding of God and awaken that understanding in you changes the game significantly, as it did for Jesus.
Chantal, what does Jesus mean to you today? I mean, after the experience you've had in the church, you know, after the experience you've had writing this book, the countless conversations that I'm aware that you have week in and week out with believers and people that are oftentimes might even be questioning their faith. What does Jesus mean to Chantal in 2026?
There is a key part at the end of my book where you hear my story and you hear me talk about the shadow side of church that we don't talk about enough, where the church has grown through things like the slave trade and witch trials, and we have not confronted the harm. But at the end of it all, I say, I will not walk away from Jesus. So I have a very alive, living, active relationship with Christ. I pray to Christ. I encounter Christ in the silence. I am very connected and loving. The pain that I experienced in the church is not the same as my relationship with Christ. I believe that we we, meaning society, is longing for an alternative paradigm to what it looks like to follow Jesus today, because the way church is now is not enough for more and more people. And so part of my love for Jesus is to push for a nobler alternative version of following Jesus than what we have in this current model that is good enough and working fine for some people and is harming many others.
Someone I can almost hear him right now. Someone is listening to this conversation. They might be watching the live stream on Facebook. They might be listening on WTOB on a Sunday morning. Maybe they're listening to the replay on my podcast, and they're telling themselves that everything you just said is complete blasphemy. What is your response to them? And you've written this book. And, you know, to some people, they may say that the ideas that you're promoting through this book run counter to the inspired word of God in the Bible. What is your response to that person that's on the way to church this Sunday morning?
So my book is grounded in scripture. Throughout the Bible, you will see scripture being referenced and being used. And throughout my book, what I say is that I'm not one who wants to throw baby Jesus out with the bathwater. I say in the book, if church is working for you, if your church is serving your community, if people are being honored, if women are being treasured, have at it. Like, yes, there are plenty of churches and church leaders that are doing it right. I work with many of them. I coach many of them. I know them. They are my colleagues and friends. They are folks in our community. They're doing it right. There's nothing wrong with church in so many ways. And some of us are called to push for a nobler alternative version where women like me are not being harmed. Now, John, this is not popular, but I'm going to say it. I have had 30 one-on-one conversations with women in the Episcopal Church, my denomination, that have been harmed in similar ways that I have. That's a problem. Women on short and long-term disability, women that have lost their jobs for coming forward, women that have experienced retaliation, women that to this day are still unemployed because they did the wrong thing by speaking out when they were harmed. That is a problem. So go on, drive to church and love it. If you feel good about church, I'm not opposed to that. But we still have to push for church where people are not harmed behind closed doors or out in front like the Southern Baptists do. We got to push for that. That's just like when people say, I love my country, and so I'm going to speak out against what's happening if I don't feel good about it, right? I'm doing the same thing.
You know, not everyone that goes through the experience that you went through within the church, or maybe even in a workplace, or they could have went through some type of violence within their own home or their own family. Not everyone that goes through this type of experience runs out to minister to other people and pray with other people and write books and show up on podcasts and give speeches and do the types of things that you're doing right now. For those people that have been through traumatic experiences and see themselves as victims, how do you move beyond that, you know, without minimizing the actual trauma that you've experienced?
How do they move beyond it?
Or how did you move beyond it? Obviously, you had a traumatic experience, but
yeah, thanks,
you're still doing all the things that you're doing.
Well, I think I appreciate the opportunity to answer that question. So just a reminder to the listener that I was harmed severely 13 years ago. It's been a while. And for years, I was in intense therapy and healing. I had a healing team around me. I was on short-term disability. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder at the end of what happened to me. So it was severe. And I leaned into the word. I read the Bible every day. I read about Jesus's healing powers. And I believe in the power of like our medical and psychological and therapists and all. I believe that God moved in all those ways. For years after that, I did not talk about it because I felt such shame. And that's the way that our culture is. I never referenced it, never talked about it. I was invited to speak to a women's conference to share how I ended up creating a successful ministry outside of the church and how I got there. And when I mentioned, that was the first time I mentioned the harm I endured. And after
I mentioned it to this women's clergy conference. Ever since that day, women have sought me out to share their story, to say, this is happening to me too. Mm. And so for 3 years, women have sought me out to say that's happening to me too. And every time I do a podcast like this, every time I show up and talk about it, more women seek me out to say, thank you for speaking up. This is happening to me too. So I never knew this is how my life was going to unfold. But what I know is that God is calling me to this moment. And it is okay if the average woman that's been harmed is not where I'm at now, because this is just what God's calling is for me. And it does take a long time to overcome the shame. I've been working with a couple other people. We've created a whole network of things, a whole network called Water and Light. You can go to my author website. It's ChantalMcKinney.com. You click on the Water and Light tab and you will see all of these resources for women being harmed in the church. Like this weekend, this Wednesday evening, I'm doing free healing circles for women. So we're creating support for people that are coming forward so that we're not siloed and shamed, because the more we share stories with one another, then we break that shame that's been put upon us.
Well, I think this is so remarkable. This morning I was reading and I spent a lot of time in the morning reflecting, and I was reading and reading Genesis actually, and talking about creation. And I think so often as humans, we think the creation process is over. You know, the 7 days, God has already rested, so the creation process is ended. But the creation process is actually never ended. It's still ongoing. The moment of creation is still happening right now, and it's still expanding. And this conversation that we're having and some of the trauma and the experiences that you're addressing through your book and through your testimony is a part of that creation process.
That's
and
right.
Part of the unfolding of consciousness itself and life of, right. of itself. And I think so many of us, I know for me this morning, when I took a moment to just reflect on that truth, I just felt a sense of warmth and comfort. Just to know that the story hasn't been fully written yet. And the writing process is still ongoing as we speak. Creation is still unfolding upon itself and experiencing itself. So I think that's remarkable. Your healing journey has now led to this book, and you've talked a little bit about throughout the conversation, some of the passages and what people can see within the message of the book. But I want you to talk a little bit about what you hope readers experience. If that person goes to bookmarks and grabs the book, as you so suggested, what do you hope they experience by the final chapter?
By the final chapter, what the book has been written to accompany the reader on a journey toward spiritual expansion that takes them beyond the confines of the faith they were raised with. And so even if the reader has not had harm happen to them, so it doesn't throw that out, but it invites them on a spiritual journey to encounter God beyond what they have known before. So there's a chapter on Christ consciousness. Algernon, I love that you talked about creation. There's a chapter on co-creating. And I actually say, I think in this stage of Christianity, we spend a lot of time thinking and talking about acting right and doing the right thing. And I think that's stage one. You know, Richard Rohr and Brené Brown on a podcast, Richard Rohr said, in the future, we'll look back and we will consider this to be baby Christianity. So my sense is that right now we're in the stage of doing good, right? And if I come forward and report harm, and then it looks like I haven't done good, so then we'll shame everybody, right? In the future, I think it will be about co-creating. I think understanding Christ consciousness, encountering the divine within, and following Jesus, and how we can bring about the kingdom of God on this earth. I think that's where it's at. I think we can create the reality that is in alignment with God for all of our lives, and I think that is the future. I mean, I'm interested in like co-creating a nobler version of faith that gets us beyond this stage, which is fine for some and not for others. So, yeah, I want the reader to feel like they've got a partner. There's like questions in the back of every book, but just like a partner in taking them beyond where they've been before.
Well, most of my audience that follows me on Facebook know that I'm not shy about talking about these kind of topics and these subjects. But I am on record, and I've said this before, I'll say it again for my audience today, that I believe that faith is just the first stage of awakening. And certainly you can get into that stage and never get beyond that stage, never get beyond just faith, then you'll be totally fine. You have a great life. But there are other stages of awakening. You can't awaken to higher and higher degrees of consciousness that move beyond just faith. When you strengthen your relationship with Source, as you draw closer to Source, as you build your awareness and your self-awareness and better engage with divine awareness, you will reach stages of awakening that you maybe never even dreamed of. Just by going to church, but you have to be willing to explore these parts of the process. And, I talk about the creation process and the fact that it's still ongoing and it's still expanding. What I think is, and I love to write, I have not written a book like Chantal. I've written probably 600 op-eds in 20 years, but I've not sat down long enough to write a book. But what I've come to learn when I journal, when I write op-eds, when I'm going through that process, I oftentimes surprise my own self as I'm going through the writing process. I'm literally learning parts of my own mind and my own self that sometimes I didn't even realize was there until I sit down and go through the process itself. What surprised you most, Chantal, as you went through this process of writing the book?
Oh, boy. It took me about 5 years from when I started the book to when it was published. And I think, honestly, for the reason why it took so long is because I'm a wife and a mother of three children and I work full time. And so part of what surprised me was figuring out again and again, how do I fit this into my already full life? And just sometimes waking up at 4:30 in the morning would work for me. And then it just didn't. And I had to figure out another way. The other thing that surprised me, though, is I often experience the ease and flow of the words coming out. And it feels like very much being in alignment with divine, especially when you're centering yourself in silence and in prayer, as I know, you and I have talked about, and that comes out easily and it feels like flow. But what is surprising is that, it can all come out easy, but then how do you construct the book for the reader so that the reader understands, right? How do I put a book together that includes both my painful story, but also the spiritual awakening and also my longing for and hope for the future of church? So just there are multiple layers of how a book comes together. And there were times where it just felt like it never ended. It felt like having a baby in that way. It's just like, you're birthing a creation and it's not over until it's over. Right. But I'd do it again. I mean, it was, it's a great process.
Well, 5 years, I think that was God nudging me to at least get started. Right. I've been writing op-eds for 20 years. It's God saying to gosh, Algernon, if you just started 20 years ago, the book would be ready now. So maybe I've got to start that process myself, Chantal. So thank you for the inspiration. And I absolutely love, and for my audience, what I love about this conversation today is that we're talking about something that's a very traumatic experience. I don't want to minimize that because depending on who's listening, perhaps maybe you've had a similar experience. But I do want to say this, and I think sometimes it's so difficult to see this when we're in the middle of an experience or a circumstance. But God is always using, even those things that are happening in your life that are unwanted, you don't desire it, you don't want to go through it, you didn't ask for it, and to some degree you might label it as bad, but God is always using everything for good. And I think the number of lives that Chantal has already touched through her prayer and her coaching and all the work that she's done, and the countless more lives that Chantal is going to touch through this book and just the outreach that she's doing right now, everything. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and to them who are called according to their purpose. And I think, Chantal, you have been called according to your purpose. And I'm so grateful that you're so willing and so open to share your testimony and share your story and allow that to maybe help someone else start their healing journey as well. So one more time, before we wrap up here, go ahead and plug the book once again and let the audience know where they can find it.
Great. So my book is Following Jesus Beyond Church Walls. If you're local here in the Winston-Salem area, you can pick up a signed copy at Bookmarks. You can order it. They'll ship it to you from Bookmarks in Winston-Salem, or you can order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, maybe Goodreads. There's a couple different places that are carrying it online now. If you go to my author website, ChantalMcKinney.com, you will find information about the way that we are supporting other women and people harmed in the church. There's an opportunity to support that work through tax-exempt donation. You'll see events that I'm doing, other ways to engage with me. I love engaging with readers, so I hope that you'll check out the website as well.
And I want to encourage my audience to follow her suggestions. Make sure you go learn. First of all, I want you to go learn more about Chantal McKinney and just the impact that she's making in our community and across the country. But then I also want you to give serious consideration to purchasing her book and supporting her work. Chantal, we're so grateful to have you locked in with us. Here's my last question of the show. They always know I'm going to ask this question because I'm a huge, huge fan of all our lovely local restaurants. I'm a huge supporter of the small businesses throughout our community. What's one restaurant you recommend in your hometown?
Ooh, I only have one. I love Los Juanes off of Jonestown Road. I love the family. I love the food. I love that food, love the environment. My family has a great experience. I happen to have two teen boys that have voracious appetites, and they have some sandwiches there that are about this big. And if my kids are taking home half the sandwich, that's how you know, boy, that's a big sandwich. But Los Juanes, you got to check them out. Really good nachos, too.
This has been another episode of Locked In with Algernon Cash. My thanks to Chantal McKinney for joining us today. Be sure to pick up her new book and continue exploring the important ideas we discussed in this conversation. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about politics, business, money, religion, and the community issues most important to our state and country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash. Y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.